You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hey, Launch Streeters, Tamara here. Good morning, afternoon, evening, or hey, maybe even middle of the night, depending on where you are around the globe. No matter what time zone you're in, I am so grateful that you're here. Have you ever looked at other people and thought, dang, I wish I had the confidence they did to speak up the way they did, to take risks, to pursue innovation, to go after those bold ideas? It's like whoever those people are, they naturally just exude confidence and have no fear of anything. So interestingly, my guest today, Lale Hancock, is all about that confidence, but real confidence. And real confidence includes fear. It's just how you handle it. Lale is featured in the new book, Leaders and Legends, which also features Steve Jobs, Suzy Orman, and many others. So she is in good company. And with over 25 years of work under her belt, Lale has dedicated her career and personal life to inspiring and empowering individuals and organizations who want to exponentially grow their lives and businesses. But she's also involved in some really cool stuff, which she'll talk about today. And she'll also talk to us about how to not care about other people's judgments. By the way, this podcast is brought to you by our amazing sponsors, Brility Digital. Check out their free digital assessment for brands and businesses of all sizes. The link is in the show notes. And actually, partway through this interview with Lale, I'm actually going to break to interview Derek, the founder. He drops some serious knowledge bombs for us. So thanks, awesome sponsor. We could not be able to reach these thousands of people across the globe that we do without you. So here we go.
Lale, thank you so much for joining me today. I have a feeling this is going to be a pretty interesting conversation.
I am really looking forward to it. Thank you so much for having me today.
So I have to know, what's your favorite innovative brand or business? And then obviously, why do you love it so much?
You know, there's never one. But if I had to really look at all the businesses that are out there, I would have to say Apple is one of my innovative businesses. They're always looking outside the box and always willing to look at every day as being day one. In their products, their services, everything that they're putting out there. So I have to say I tend to love Apple.
Do you think that their ability... How do I ask this? Their ability to innovate has more of a direct impact on you and me than kind of some of the other stuff we might use. I don't know if that question makes sense. I'm just trying to like, one of the things that makes Apple so great, right, is it changes how I do things.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have to tell you, my background was more Microsoft based. I even had a job at Dell where I managed the Microsoft relationship globally and have always found a lot of, positive influence coming out of Microsoft and the way that it partnered with businesses and also individuals and their outlook. And looking at Apple and the ways it started with so many people, and then, you know, we think about Steve Jobs as one of the biggest innovators out there. And the products that they make are there to make your life easier, but it's not just the working individual that they're targeting. They're looking at like my mom. My mom's 76 years old, and getting an iPhone to her was one of the greatest gifts we can give her. It gave her independence and also allowed her to be part of the latest trends of what's out there. And Apple makes life easy for people. So it doesn't matter if you're a techie savvy person. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're a stay-at-home mom. It really doesn't matter what your background or your education is. they're creating products that everyone can use.
God, it's so true. And I would just very quickly to say on the Steve Jobs thing, like he's a super innovator and that's great. But you know, everybody at Apple innovates, which is why it works. It's Steve Jobs was the face and he was brilliant. So not that he didn't identify something and make it happen, but everybody there does it. Which I think is part of their brilliance is they hire for people who innovate regardless of what your job role is.
And their idea of hiring, and you know what, there were many years I was a partner with Apple and I would say they weren't the easiest partner or company to partner with.
I'm sure, yeah.
And it is because they do things their way and they do things that take forever. So I don't want to put it out there that, you know, they're like anything perfect out there. But, you know, if I do have to look at different brands and different ways that they're, like I said, for me, the larger population, you know, where we're not excluding anyone based on their age or based on their education level or based on what they are, really gives a very different level of empowering as a oneness in the world. And, you know, that's what makes me excited.
Yeah, I could totally get it. It's funny because my phone's next to my computer as I'm sitting here doing this interview and I just, it's like, it's so part of my life and I almost don't think about it anymore. So it's so fascinating. I want to switch to you because we have so much to dig into. One of the things that you're an expert in or known for is increasing confidence. So, but let's talk about that because part of the reason for those for Launch Street, you know, those of us in this community, part of the reason why I wanted to have La Leon is because I think that that's a part of innovating is having the confidence to do so. And confidence doesn't mean like boost to me anyway, it doesn't mean being boisterous and egotistical, but it's about like believing in yourself and all that. So, but actually that may not be your definition. So let's start there by getting on the same page. What do you mean by confidence?
I think I want to start with what I don't mean is, which is exactly what you just said. I think the word confidence has had a lot of definitions that misidentify what it really is. For me, when you're actually being yourself and you're not trying to look like anyone else, trying to, you know, mirror how someone else does something, you create a level of energy and a level of confidence that allows you to try things even if they're difficult. You know, if you look at children from the minute they're born until they hit, I would say a form of puberty, or I would say even seven, at the age of seven, they are fearless. They have no reason to be stopped. They're willing to make music with, you know, pots and pans. They're willing to say hello to any child that they see and have no judgments about them. And they're willing to try new things and be curious. And that's the piece that boosts our confidence is when we're not second doubting everything we're thinking, every idea that we have. And I don't know at what age it actually creates itself. It could be that people are starting school and, you know, between, you know, I'd say like first grade and middle school, there's some things that change with peer pressure and other things where our confidence change. And also how we see our parents. You know, if you have a very passive family member, it's very easy to duplicate them and their level of confidence. If you have someone who's very aggressive in the family, it's very easy to duplicate them and be very aggressive. But when you're actually being you, you're not being your mom, you're not being your dad, you're not being your grandparents. You have those great qualities that they all have, but you shine as who you are. And that just boosts a whole other level of confidence.
I've got a lot of questions for you, but I want to start with the second doubting for a second. Because I think that that's huge. And someone once said to me, like, the loudest microphone is in your head. And I thought that's a little bit kind of what you're saying here. How do we go about identifying those doubts that are really holding us back? Because I think while they're loud, in some ways, they're also, I want to say invisible, but they're also subtle in a way that we don't even know what's happening to ourselves. You know, that we don't even realize we're doing it to ourselves.
You know, one of the first things I always like to share with people is start trusting the messages your body's giving you. Even in your voice, you know, when your voice changes and starts to crack and like there's just some symptoms that even your voice gives you, you're no longer being yourself. And the same thing, like a lot of times when we are going into the self-doubt, when we're going into those fears or those hidden, like you said, invisible limitations, your body starts tensing up. Like there's symptoms in your body that are giving you messages. Hey, you're not being yourself. Hey, you're going into this world of like, you know, the monkey mind, I can call it, where you're no longer now looking at possibilities or solutions. I literally call it, it's like a roundabout. Like you have one thought that just keeps circling back to the same thing. And it's usually negativity and doubt. And it's all those things that are there to distract us. But when you are willing to actually say, you know what? Hey, this is a pattern I'm creating in my life. I'm coming back into self-doubt. I'm coming back into judgments. Okay, what if for a moment I just pause and I say, okay, instead of the self-doubt, what's one thing I could be grateful for about the situation, about this person, about me, whatever's going on? Because when the moment you go into gratitude, you diffuse judgments, you diffuse the monkey mind, you diffuse those, you know, limiting thoughts that just get you back in that circle mode.
So I'm curious, I'd love to hear a case study is the wrong language, but just a story of someone that maybe you work with or that you know who kind of went from that to the other place and how they did it. Because to me, this is one of those important things that's an everyday struggle for a lot of us.
Yeah. You know, can I just even share my own story?
Of course.
I'm in Russia right now. I landed here yesterday and it's just been such an interesting story. We had a car service that was going to pick us up from the airport. And 5 minutes before we're like ready to come out with our luggage, my amazing host sent me a message, said, "Hey, we have a new driver. This is what he looks like. And he'll be waiting for you outside." And I thought it was funny because you usually don't have a car that doesn't, you know, show up 5 minutes before you're about to get out. And we came out and it was this new gentleman who was just so kind and caring, did not know any English. And we're driving and, you know, and the streets of Moscow are like LA or New York. If you're familiar with those roads, it's usually bumper to bumper. So it's not a lot of distance to travel going at high speed. And we were stopped and my friend and I, we were just having a conversation about one of the buildings and boom, someone rear-ended us.
Oh.
And what was really interesting is that that's the moment where most people freak out. That's the moment people want to go into anger. They want to be frustrated that someone hit the car and now they have to deal with that. The person who hit it is going into their own world of all the things that are going to go wrong now that this has happened. Like there's all this world of judgment that gets created. And immediately my friend and I went into gratitude. And what was interesting is we don't speak Russian, but we could perceive our driver and what he was trying to share the message of with his company, you know, and his number one target was to get us a new car. So we didn't have to sit there and wait for police to come and everything else. But her and I actually looked at each other and said, is this a problem or are we going to turn it into a possibility? And we both looked at each other and started to laugh. Now, each of us had our own little sensations in our bodies. Like I was like, oh my God, my lower hip, my sacrum. Okay. I just felt it, you know, the minute the car hit. And then she's like, my neck, you know? And I'm like, okay, are we going to go into the trauma and drama of pain? Or are we going to actually ask a question here? And we did, like, we totally flipped what would have been one of the worst things that could happen, you know, our first day in town, to, hey, we're not going to let this stop us. We're still going to have a good time. And we started to actually laugh and relax our bodies into laughter. Your body tenses up when you have that accident. And, you know, but when you're not tensing up, you actually allow your body to create its own way of healing whatever could have occurred right now. And so, you know, I realized by her and I also like laughing and like not going into the seriousness of it, our driver couldn't get mad. Like you saw, you could perceive he's trying so hard to be so frustrated and like raise his voice and get mad, but he couldn't. It couldn't even like stick. And I was like, look, we're actually changing and influencing him not to freak out. And
I'm sorry, it was such a good story and I want to dig in a little bit further on it. Two questions.
Sure.
One is like, I love that phrase trauma and drama. I've never heard that before. Yeah. It's fantastic. it's great. Why do we gravitate towards that so much? Because that seems to be a lot of our default, you know?
Yep.
I mean, is that just how our brains are wired? Is it cultural? Like, how do we, why do we go there so frequently?
You know, I want to come back to what I shared with you. As kids, we don't have this. I really believe these are things we learn and they're habits that we mimic from our families, our teachers, society. It's not something we're born with. Like kids aren't born having judgment or going into wrongness as their number one thing to do. But everyone, and that's the thing about confidence, is that most of us, we were confident. And there's a situation that occurred in our childhood and our adulthood that kind of shifted it from the curiosity and the confidence to self-doubt, to did we get this right? Are we going to get this right? You know, like becoming right and correct and not failing is one of the things we're taught in school. Get the right answer.
Right.
But there is no right answer because there's a broad number of ways you can look at a problem and come up with solutions. I want to come back to Apple, you know, or Microsoft or these other companies. It's not just about Apple, but if you just look at something from one direction, you've eliminated 90% of your client base. You have to be willing to look at it from there is no one right answer, but if we do this, there's these other possibilities that are available. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit. You said that like, we're so busy looking for right and correct. Because I think in a very obvious way that really impacts our abilities to innovate. So how do you think about that? What's the correlation there between kind of confidence, this need to be right and correct, and our ability to innovate?
I always tell people, you know, like when you're actually looking at a problem, are you willing to get it wrong? Like, are you willing to have the wrong solution? You know, 3M, they're one of their biggest products. The sticky, the one that we love, that we spend so much money on every year, was a failed project. Their target was to create a glue that would stick and would never come off. And by their ability not to make their, you know, whatever, you know, innovative thing that got created, instead of saying, hey, we failed here, they're like, hey, we just created this. How can we use it to our advantage? You know, what else can we create from this? You know, like it just went from, instead of the negative, it's wrong, to the, oh, what other options do we have with this? And I think they're teaching us not to do that anymore, even though I would say this generation doesn't allow for that. And that's what I love about this new generation, is that our generation would have said, you're right or you're wrong. This generation says, you know what? There's option A, B, C, D, E, and F. I'm not wrong. Which one are you choosing? So I really think also our kids are showing us and showing the world what we used to think was correct is not correct, and that there's so much more available. And that's where innovation is. Your willingness to be curious and look outside the lines of wrongness.
So how do you do that? So if I'm in a workplace and my performance is, or my reviews are based on my performance, and I'm 100% with you that it you have to be willing to get it wrong. But how do I put this into practice?
Yep. And I do this, just so you know, I have a coaching practice. And so like I work with a lot of executives in there and leadership team around this. It's not that you go out there to get it wrong, but you have to allow your employees to make mistakes. You have to allow them to fail, actually. See, when you're not allowing your kids to fail, they will fail. When you're trying to prevent someone from something, all you do is send them energy to go do what you're telling them not to do. Like, I'll give you one example. When you tell your teenager, don't do something, what's the first thing they do?
I mean, they do it twice.
Yeah, because you told them not to do it. It's the same thing. If you create an environment where it's not failing, but it might be that something didn't work out, hey, you know what? If it doesn't work, let's ask more questions. Okay, what have we not considered here? Who should we be adding to this project or service or product or whatever that may have more information for us. You know, I think it's the willingness to keep asking questions and not go into the box of the right and wrong. And when you give your staff that space and you give them a place that they can actually have this curiosity. So just so you know, what I used to do with my team is that, you know, what your weekly or bi-monthly get-togethers that you would bring everyone in, it wasn't just about me telling them all the news that's happening in the company. Yeah, there was some of that, but there was creation time. So it was like, hey guys, what's working, what's not working? On the things that aren't working, hey, what ideas do you have? And allow them to brainstorm together, not problems, but solutions. And then you find that if you open it up to someone who's not even in your department to actually be part of that create time, you allow another set of ideas to come in. People can bounce ideas. It's not failing if something doesn't work. You're bouncing ideas.
Well, I think someone once said to me, you can't innovate and analyze at the same time. Our brains can't do it. And I think part of that right or wrong is because we're trying to analyze everything too soon.
You're correct. You're 100% correct. And it's that same thing of judgment and gratitude. The two cannot coexist with each other. They're on different energetic frequencies. So if you have gratitude, what you're actually going to have is more creative ideas. But if you're in that problem mode, you're just going to attract more problems because your focus is problems. So guess what gets attracted? That.
Right.
If you have gratitude, you literally, it's like the magnet brings in more gratitude and brings more innovation, brings in more ease, brings in more joy, brings in more creativity. So it just depends on, you know, what kind of leader are you going to be? Are you going to be one that empowers your staff to think outside the box, or are you the kind that's going to keep them in the box?
All right. I am here with Derek, who is the president of Brility. So Derek, your company Brility is amazing at helping your clients think and act differently and leverage an experimental mindset to stand out. So how does having an experimental mindset help you do that?
Well, thanks, Tamara. I would say the experimental mindset is essential for long-term success and predictable success. We are all about building a system that is reliable for growth. And to do that, you have to challenge assumptions. The experimental mindset allows us to put our best foot forward, adapt and iterate, and really learn what is causal to work so that we have predictable success. We really are in a dynamic environment right now. Technology is changing, business is changing, and assumptions need to be challenged. So in order to do that, we need to craft careful experiments where we can learn, adapt, and grow.
What's the downside of not experimenting?
The assumptions. I mean, you see Blockbuster gets wiped out by Netflix. There is a graveyard of companies out there who thought they had it figured out, and they marched towards a certain doom because others were out there experimenting and figuring out what works and what doesn't and adapting to the changing marketplace. Amazon runs 10,000 concurrent experiments at once. There's a reason they dominate e-commerce. Google does the same thing. Facebook does the same thing.
Wow. So can you share with me one example of how Brility did that for one of your clients?
We have a GIS client, which is a type of software that does mapping and locations. They are a small startup, but very, very well funded. And they're going up against a massive incumbent. And they there isn't a current name or explanation for their offering. It's not commonly searched for or known. And what we had to do was run dozens of experiments to see what language at a high level resonated with their audience, which were anywhere from engineers to salespeople to VPs. And through that, we really found what surprised us most was not outcome and benefit-based promises, but actual screenshots of the technology, which seemed to immediately and intuitively have the users grasp how it was utilized. And there's a shift in the marketplace that people are sick of platitudes and promises. They want to see a little bit of how things are done. Those experiments were very revealing, and we're doubling down on them for the client now, and it's very successful.
All right, launch readers, what we need to figure out, I know I'm going to go do right now, is figure out where I'm experimenting and where I'm assuming. Derek, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
I'm so intrigued by what you're saying about that. You can't be in gratitude and in judgment at the same time. And it makes me kind of think about, I don't know, some of those times when you're in a meeting and you're like, you know, being so hypercritical, not that we shouldn't analyze stuff. In business, we do. But there are probably moments where I've jumped there so soon that I probably shut down some energy, mm-hmm. but more importantly, some space to innovate that I didn't even realize.
And most of this is coming back to what you said earlier. So much of it is we do it unconsciously. Right. It just becomes the autopilot of our lives instead of like, and those are the moments, like I just said, like for me, none of this is right or wrong. It's just looking at and saying, I catch myself now when I'm about to go into the autopilot mode and say, ah, let me ask a question. So it's like also about you becoming aware of where are you doing this in your life? Because if you're doing it at work, I guarantee you're doing it at home. If you're doing it at home, I guarantee you're doing it with your finances. You know, it's this whole ripple right. effect of your whole life. So it's about becoming more conscious of like, what am I saying? What are my actions? And where am I not even willing to be flexible enough to hear other perspectives?
Well, I think what you just said there is so key about that willingness to hear other people's perspectives. Because I think it's very egotistical of us to think that we have all the answers. Even if it's something that we're versed in, we're an expert in, we don't have all the answers. We can't possibly know everything.
You're right, because there's infinite answers.
Yeah,
I mean, like,
right.
it just depends on which route you're taking. We'll have even more options. You could have 10 different options
right.
that come up, or 20, or 30, or 40, or whatever it is. So, yeah, it really is that it's endless.
Well, one of the things I always find fascinating about people is we're so hooked on having the right answer and being the most right in the room, that we actually shut down a lot of opportunities to make our ideas better.
Totally. And it's interesting. If you're trying to be right, you have to make yourself wrong to prove what you're saying is right. So you tend to do the opposite. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So the right and wrong are this bipolarness of never winning. Because you're always in the state of right or wrong. But when you're neutral and you're looking at things from an interesting point of view, you're no longer trying to get it right. You're willing to come up with creative ideas and solutions to see which one's going to create greater.
So that is wise advice. And it actually leads me to my next question, which is something that you talk about that really spoke to me. So and I think maybe as someone in the spotlight, given what I do, you talk a little bit about embracing the subtle art of not caring what other people think. And I think, you know, given our conversation just now too, like if you're not worried about right or wrong and you're out there just trying and seeing and experimenting, you kind of have to have that art built up because people criticize. So talk a little bit about what you mean by that and how you make that happen.
This is one of the things that was such a game changer for my life. Because
oh,
my
bet.
Whole life is about pleasing everyone. You know, first it was my family, then it was my husband, then it was the kids and, you know, business and your employees and everyone else. And there is no doing that. You cannot do that. And one of the greatest gifts as a leader, it's your willingness to be aware of what people's points of views are, you know, what their judgments are, what they need to hear, but your flexibility to use that information to your advantage and not to let it affect you and slow you down. So one of the tools that I love is you and your body talking to each other. Literally relax your body, put your feet firm on the ground, and just say boundaries down, barriers down, limitations down. You can call it whatever you want, but we have these energetic walls that put us in defense mode, which makes us at the effect of other people's points of view. So when you have no walls, someone can say you're awful. You can say your track record is terrible. Whatever they can say, it's just an opinion. It no longer affects you. It doesn't lock into your body. You don't get tense and want to fight and go into defense mode. then you're like, okay, whether I agree with what they're saying or not, then you become aware of, hey, where am I limiting myself? Where am I not exploring these other options that are available? You know, but it goes more from not making yourself wrong, but from you now becoming more aware of information you probably weren't allowing yourself to be aware of before. But if you do it from you care what they think, everything they say to you has to affect you. Everything. You rely on them to validate you. You get upset and start destruction instead of creation and innovation when they judge you and say whatever you're doing is incorrect. And it just stops. It literally stops creation. But when you say, you know what? It's really interesting that they have that opinion. I don't have to let it affect me at all. Just say the words, interesting point of view, 10 times. And you will diffuse everything. Everyone's good and bad about you. Because the good things they say tend to harm us as much as the bad stuff.
What do you mean?
Because then we shut down. So like for example, when someone says you're beautiful, you do a great job, you put them in the category of nice. You no longer see the other sides of them. It's those moments that they catch you off guard. And it's the same thing. When someone says, hey, you've done a terrible job, you're actually more willing to receive that. And you're willing to change things. You're willing to improve. You're willing to do things. But when someone says something that is nice, that's when we shut down. Like we just like, okay, this is a nice box. They're wonderful. They're amazing. And we don't see where they're not going to do what they said they were going to do. We don't see when they're about to stab us in the back. Like we just shut off our whole awareness because we put them in the nice box, you know?
It's also funny too, I think, just to build on what you're saying that, so I do a lot of keynote speaking. So I get a lot of nice and then I get some people who wanted something else, right? So And I find that like for the people who are like, oh my God, great job. You're so good at speaking or you know your stuff. I'm like, oh, thanks. It's really not me. I have a great team. Like I deflect it. It's like I'm trying to bounce it back to them or something. But if someone says to me, hey, I really wish you'd covered
we're
this.
Terrible
I'm like,
at receiving.
Yeah. And then I'm like, oh my God, let me just take that right to my heart.
But see, here's the deal. We stink at receiving because we were taught you always have to give. But our world, Earth, everything around us is about this contribution, which is gift and receiving simultaneously. If you are willing to actually receive the compliment, and like they don't have to validate you, but they acknowledge something in you, you can receive that. And not also make yourself wrong if someone says, hey, you did a terrible job here. And you'd be like, you know what, in your head, like that's an interesting point of view, but there's things you can do better. You know what I mean? But also don't make yourself wrong that their opinion of you is the only opinion.
You know, there's a couple of things you said that I think are important, but before I dig into those, I want to ask you a question. How much of do you think of other people's opinions are really just their issues bubbling up? Because sometimes I feel like people push their shit on you.
Totally.
Right? Good and bad. And then I'm taking in their
totally.
Shit.
Totally. You nailed it. See, people will accuse you of what they are already doing.
Right. Right.
Okay. And I actually had that situation today with someone, and I had to tell one of my coworkers, I mean, someone that works on my team, like, I was like, do you get that they just told you what they're already doing themselves? And then like her whole world, like relaxed, her body wasn't tense anymore. And she's like, you're right. I was trying so hard to make myself wrong for what they said. And I said, this is where you actually have to practice interesting point of view. Because see, when you're interesting point of view, you can receive the good, the bad, and all the creative ideas all at once.
And you know, I'd love to hear your perspective on this. I try to think of everything as an experiment. So if I'm a scientist and like someone and I'm everything is testing and someone comes up to me and says, look, I really like this. I don't like this. That's just data input that I get to decide what to do with. Versus taking either side personally, to be honest, like good and bad. Because if it's an experiment and you're a scientist in life, it's just like they would treat it as just data of like, okay, let's see how that affects everything else. That's all.
Exactly. I wish other people have that perspective. I think like 99% of the world doesn't think that way about, you know, I think things are changing, but it is. And actually I was a scientist. I was a biology major.
So you know exactly what I mean.
Yeah. And it is, but see, that's where I come back to what we talked about earlier. The whole confidence isn't about you relying on other people to make you confident. It's the confidence you're willing to have with yourself. When you're being you, you're going to do your best. You're going to be asking questions. You're going to do the things that bring more lightness in your life, not the things that bring you heaviness. And, you know, I mean, you know, one of the tools is like anything that's light resonates more with you, expands more in your life. And things that are heavy are usually the things that don't resonate or aren't the truth for you. And if you really start to listen to your body, like I said at the beginning of our conversation, like when you are tensing up and you're about to fight, who are you being at that moment? That is usually not you,
right?
You know, what is it that's triggering that, like the trigger to that? Like, is that person really worth you doing that to your body? Probably not. And if you're willing to listen, you will not take action on things that aren't required. And you will follow more of the things that bring you joy, which is that whole curiosity, that science thinking of like what you just described. Everything becomes information.
You know, I will say this. It took me a long time to get there and a lot of thick skin to realize like, oh, I don't have to take everything personally. Good to know. Yeah. Right. You know, and people can treat it as more of a scientist. But I want to ask you another question about the kind of confidence and the like things are kind of in and out of alignment. And this may sound like an offshoot, but I think it fits in. Do you think, how does having confidence impact your ability to say no?
See, when you lack confidence, you're constantly going into the mode that someone has to choose you.
Yeah, and you have to please them to do it.
You have to please them. You have to go out of your way to do things. But if you become the chooser, to become the chooser starts with you. Write down the things you're great at. You know, I mean, so many of us focus on what we're not great at and we kind of forget what we're great at. But just starting to, because we take it for granted. There's a million things that you're great at. And if you start to write down in one day, what are things you accomplished, okay? It will start to boost your confidence level. And when you are looking for a job or you're looking to partner with someone or whatever's happening or even a relationship, you know, so many people are seeking someone else to validate them. They go into it with a very different perspective. But if you actually are being you and you have your voice in your life, you add people who make your life greater, but you don't add it because you're lacking something. And I've got to tell you, when people do confidence, not from that egotistical perspective, but like they actually have that confidence in themselves, it's contagious. Like people are drawn to it, you know, like they're like, what is that? Like it inspires other people to step up. And I think it shows when you do it from that level of confidence than when you do it from, you're like putting the face, but you don't have the energy to back it up.
And you can always tell those people in the room that truly have it and versus the ones that don't. And I'll say that for me anyway, one of the big differentiators is how much they talk, because I find that he that says the most actually has the least to say. And, you know, the one that like pipes in at the right moments, but is willing to ask questions, willing to say they don't know, willing to defer to someone else, they're actually the ones with the most confidence, but we think we have to be this other person.
Well, you know, one of the most seductive things about your voice is silence. So just even in a conversation, when you become silent, it doesn't mean you're disengaged. There's a big difference in disengaging and being silent.
Yeah.
You force them to give you more information because they become uncomfortable in the pause moments.
Wait, are we pausing?
Okay. I think we both paused.
I was like, wait, I was like, who's going to say something next? But I just want to say to that, I used to do a lot of market research. And one of my biggest techniques for getting people to really open up was to pause. And like one person would answer and I would not say anything. Because nobody likes silence. It's a human thing. And in meetings and in negotiations in particular, it is really powerful, but we forget that. We fill the air instead.
Mm-hmm. And usually, you know, when you start to, I do a lot of different sales kickoff meeting kind of presentations and other things, keynote speaking and other stuff. And it's always interesting because when you start to remind the salespeople, shut up,
right?
Listen. And revenue goes up, return on investment goes up. And it really is like one of those things like we've been taught to talk.
Yeah.
But we don't listen always when we're talking. And that's the other piece of the confidence is that your level of being aware and present with someone can get you any information you require.
Isn't
that
the
truth? But when you do it from that other place, you don't. If anything, you put up their walls not to want to tell you anything.
God, that's. I think we could have a whole podcast around how to listen. Because
Seriously,
we could. No, I think most of us listen from a place of waiting to talk.
Mm-hmm. And most listen with already having everything worked out in their head, which goes back to the monkey mind, of how all of this is going to turn out. Instead of that willingness to be that interesting point of view and have no expectation, but just allow the conversation to go wherever it's going to go so you can gather the information you require and then you could put a proposal together or you could put, you know what I mean? I find this so interesting just because I work with so many executives and so many salespeople and it's always funny to see which ones are the ones bringing in.
It's the ones who shut up every now and again.
Yeah, they do. And they're willing to be curious and ask questions. Because see, like one of the things with Right Voice is also the willingness to know, you know, the questions to ask. Sometimes we are not good at reading the body language of the other person. We're not willing to see what are they willing to receive. And so a lot of times we also give more information than people can actually receive and then they shut down.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really is this like, but with confidence, you know, I want to come back to when you are present, truly present and aware, you will know exactly what to say that they require to hear. And nothing more than that.
Mm. There are so many that you said it really quickly earlier, but I want to highlight it for all of us listening, which is that listen without expectation. I think if we all just did that, we'd become so much more powerful in kind of what we're able to get done in this world. If just that listening without trying to get to an answer, a place, what you have to say.
You know, it's interesting. I'm doing some events here and, my promo team was looking to put some things out today on social media and they're like, what do you want to say? What do you want to tell them? How do you want to invite them? I'm like, can you just put my picture that I just sent you and say, hi, I'm so excited to be here. Like, what if it's not about expecting them to choose anything? What if it's just, hi, it could be as easy as that. But we were so taught at such an early point in life that if you don't have expectations, you can't get anything done. But it's the opposite. It's the expectations that bring us half of what could be possible or less than half, one tenth, you know. But when you do it from a higher perspective and you don't have one thing, you don't limit it into a box. You actually allow everything to contribute to it. And that's when you also invite other people to come be a contribution to you. Because remember that gifting and receiving simultaneously?
Yeah.
People then want to just help, you know, and assist you in whatever you're trying to do.
It's so fascinating just how myopic, I was just thinking about as you were talking, how myopic are, that's not listening silently, I guess that's also percolating at the same time. But it made me think about how myopic are our perspectives are and that we get so trapped in that, as opposed to allowing it to expand by actually taking in what other people have to say, you know, or what's happening on the other side of the table.
Being interested or being interesting is one of those concepts that we talk a lot about in Right Voice. And I've got to tell you, that's the piece that differentiates. Are you interested in them or are you trying to be interesting?
Have you read, I think, is it Robert Greene's book, The Laws of Influence? I can't remember if it's the 48 Laws or the Power Laws of Influence. I don't know what I'm talking about. Always stood out with me to me, and I can even envision the sentence in my head. It was like, so and so, you know, most people want to be the most interesting person in the room, but the real influence is making someone else feel like they're the most interesting person in the room. And that just never left me, not out of a manipulative way of I'm going to make this person think they're smarter than they are, but of truly being curious and interested and engaged with the people around you.
Yeah. I mean, that's engagement with people, you know, that's actually engaging versus what we were talking about earlier is like having an agenda and just trying to fit somebody in your agenda. Mm. It's a very different energy. It's a different way of actually being with people, and people know it, you know, people go on like literally they'll come up, they're ready to fight and give you nothing when you're doing it from that perspective, when you're being that interesting instead of the interested. And then when you're interested, they give you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was at a B&B the other day and bed and breakfast. And we shared a table. And the two people next to us were this couple. And they said, oh, what do you do? My friend answered. And then somehow it never got to me. And I just started asking them questions. I don't care whether people know what I do or don't do. And at the end of it, I knew everything about those people. And my friend said to me, why? You didn't answer the question. Like, why didn't you pipe in later? I was like, because it doesn't matter at the end of the day. Like, they were just being nice. And it was very kind of them to ask. But what was more interesting is we got to hear all about their hobbies. So, like, I'm good. Yeah. They don't need to know what I do. I mean, if they asked again, I would tell them. I'm not hiding. But I don't know. It was this, like, very calming place of, like the conversation moved on. I don't need to pipe in with what I do and tell you guys like tomorrow I have a podcast and they don't care. They're away for the weekend, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Before we close out, where can people go to learn more and connect?
Well, actually there's two places. There's a third coming up. I'm so excited about my management consulting company is called bellapemo.com and it's bellapemo.com. And they can find us on social media. They can go to the website and click on the Contact Us page. We have Instagram and everything you can think of. The second one is globalwellnessforall.com. Same thing, social media, or get us on the website. And I'm really excited. I have a new service and products that are going to be launching called My Everything Woman. And that one will have that as well. It's almost launched, not launched yet. So probably
by the time we release, it'll be exactly lined up with launch. And we'll put all the links in the show notes. So I can't believe we're out of time, but just what's your last piece of advice for us? The first thing we could do, like right now, when I, you know, turned stop on the podcast to pick up our confidence.
Yeah. Turn your problems into possibilities with gratitude.
I love that. Sorry, I'm just pausing. I'm pausing. Did you see that? no, I was just saying, you said that earlier and I actually wrote it down. And I love that because even in the moments in work where you're like, wow, we have this challenge.
Yeah.
How can I turn that into, I'll just tell you a great example. Just before I got on this recording, I had a couple people trying to buy our assessment online and something happened. There's a tech issue. They couldn't buy it. And I was like, oh my God, there's a problem. Oh my God, tech team. And then I didn't realize I was doing it, but I think your advice is important. I was like, oh, wait a minute. This is a team from a company. I've seen multiple of them try to buy. So I have an opportunity here to talk to them about why they're buying it. Individuals from this company keep buying. But I had to take a moment and really intentionally pull myself out of problem mode.
And you know what? We've been taught to be good solution to the problems.
Yeah.
But what if we didn't have to be good problem solvers? So create problems to solve them. Instead, we could be creative, innovative, and actually create things that haven't existed yet.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different mindset.
So powerful. Well, Elate, we could go on, but thank you so much for joining us. This was really insightful. And I'm encouraging all of us out there to just not just be in a place of gratitude, because I actually think we hear that all the time, but to really use some of the tools that you just talked about the problem to possibility, about listening without expectations. If we just did those two things, I think we'd have very different and interesting outcomes today.
And how many people would you empower at work or at home just by that mindset of changing the problem to a possibility?
Yeah, that's huge. Huge. And to your point with the car example in the very beginning, even in the little life things that happen, it's all good. It's fine. My dishwasher broke the other day, but now I know how to buy a dishwasher. Did not know how to do that before.
So, you should have called me. I'm an expert at that one. I know so much about dishwashers.
Thank God for this woman at Home Depot, because I was like, so I don't know what I'm doing. Lalay, thank you so much for joining me too. It was fantastic.
Thank you so much. I'm very grateful for you and your listeners.
Ah, confidence, right? I love the part about not caring what other people think. It's funny. In fact, just the other day, I saw this meme. I'm probably going to botch this, but it said something like, because someone else doesn't see your value doesn't mean it's not there. It's so tough, isn't it? I think Lalay had a great spin on it. So how about we work on our confidence together? This will help all of us unleash more innovation. All right, I'm going to work on not internalizing everything everyone says to and about me. So what are you going to work on? Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.